Welcome back to Jesus Speaks Farsi. We're excited to be starting a new series highlighting testimonies of Iranian Christians whose stories are just a little different from what you may have come to expect. While each story is unique in its own way, they all share the common thread of the gospel having transformed their lives. Today, Jennifer and I are talking with Danny, a talented young Iranian believer who grew up in a Christian home inside Iran. Danny plays the drums in an Iranian worship team and works full-time as a project coordinator, helping to support the church in Iran. He's also married to Niloufar, whose story we shared in episode 3 of our Encounters with Jesus series. One note, because Danny lives in England and Jennifer and I are in the States, there are a few spots in our conversation where the connection isn't great. Regardless, I know you'll enjoy hearing from Danny today. We're glad you're here. Let's get started. Well, we're here with Danny today. We're excited to chat with him about his story. And thanks for being on this with us and taking some time to share your story with us, Danny.
Yeah, of course.
Well, we were just going to ask some questions about your life in Iran growing up and hear from you about what that looked like. And then we'll have some questions that we'd like to, you know, if we've got some follow-up questions, you can answer a little more and just tell us some, like, how you came to Christ and a little bit about your family and all that. So why don't we start with what life was like for you growing up in Iran?
It was very different than a lot of my friends because we were openly Christians, if we want to say that, because the government knew officially we were Christians. My mom was from a Jewish background family who became Christians 4 generations before her. And my dad is actually a Muslim convert, so we were kind of a worst case scenario in Iran. But it's funny because it's actually a testimony, because when my parents wanted to name me, they wanted to pick a name that shows like he's apart from the rest of the like people you see. He's not a Muslim, at least. So they picked Daniel as my name, which is not really a common name in Iran. They call Daniel, but it's Daniel is a name. Daniel means God is my judge, I think, but in English. So they specifically wanted to name me Daniel. So when they went to basically get my ID, they prayed and fasted. So when they went there, they said, we want to name our son Daniel. And they said, no, you can't. It's not a Muslim name. And my parents were saying, we're not Muslims, we're Christians. And so the guy thought he's actually trying to threaten my dad by writing in the note section of my ID, it says that the father of the owner of this ID card is a Christian. So that became my free pass everywhere we went, going as a Christian. So, I didn't have to hide my Christianity.
Wow. So how is that a free pass and not something that would get your family arrested or keep you from participating in community in some way?
Well, I mean, so because my mom was already a Christian, even way before the revolution, so she was a very active member of the church and the government knew all about her. Mm-hmm. And of course, they knew about my dad. He was a Muslim convert. Both of them actually got arrested in like separate days for just one day. They were interrogating them. They only said my parents saying you shouldn't be evangelizing to other people, which my dad replied to them saying if other people ask me questions, it's rude not to reply. So, it's not like we didn't have any struggles. We always knew our phones are being tapped. We knew my dad knew most of the time he's being followed in the streets. He couldn't find any good jobs because everybody knew he's a Christian now. Mm-hmm. My brother and I couldn't go to good schools because everybody knew we're Christians. So when they would take like exams to see if they want to accept you or not, suddenly our exam papers would get lost.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. There was an impact. All right. That makes more sense to me. I was wondering, there was repercussions.
Yeah.
Was the church a very active congregation before the revolution where she was?
No, actually, she said before, I mean, she always says this, before the revolution, the number of Christians in Iran were so limited, like everybody knew each other in the whole country. And they always kept praying for revival and that God would send more people to the church and God would save more people. And then the revolution happened. But then because of the revolution, so many people started coming to church. I mean, even though evangelizing was illegal, and I mean, not that nobody would evangelize, but we would see a lot of people coming because they met Jesus in a dream, because a miracle happened. Like, it's not like somebody would just go and evangelize to them. It's Jesus, like, doing the job and basically bringing them to church. So we were just hosting them at the church again.
It's incredible. I know we had talked earlier about when you lived in Iran, that your mom had a unique job. I wanted to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my mom was actually a part of the Bible translation project that Elon started years ago. And
But that was translating from the same language to the same language, or what was that translation she was doing?
So it was translated from English to Farsi, but it wasn't being translated directly. I mean, the main source was the English, but then they had to do a lot of research and go back to the rooted words. And it wasn't just like translating a normal book where you read and translate. You have to like do a lot of research on every single word just to make sure you're picking the right equivalent words.
How'd she get started with that? Where would you find that kind of a job inside?
because of her Jewish background and because she's a woman, she had a hard time finding a job in Iran. And she kept praying for a job that she could do at home. And I mean, I know after pandemic, working at home is like such a normal thing to do, but back then it wasn't very normal. Mm-hmm. But she wanted to work from home so she could take care of me and my brother because we were little kids back then. So my uncle, who was the theologian I was talking about, was the head of this project back then. So they hired my mom originally as a coordinator for the project, but then she started translating a little bit at a time, and then they saw how good she is, so she got more projects to do, and she did a lot of books in the Bible, so yeah, she was a part of that project for many years, I think about 13 or 14 years.
Wow. Did anything change about her faith during that process? Did she say, like, I mean, you have to know the Bible pretty well if you're literally translating word for word. I wonder if there's anything maybe she hadn't heard about or thought about before, or maybe that was a process for her?
I've never really heard anything directly from my mom. And I mean, since she started, I was two, so I don't have any reference behind before that to know if she changed or not. But I mean, my mom is always a very wise person that I know, like, I can always trust. She fully knows the Bible word by word. So I can always rely on her and like her wisdom.
What about for you personally, when did you feel led to become a Christian or to receive Jesus yourself?
So, I mean, because I grew up in a Christian family, it wasn't anything strange that I didn't know about. The story of me giving my life to Jesus is actually a funny one. I was 8 years old, and I mean, I grew up in the church, like hearing all the cute stories of Bible with Noah and the ark and all those cute stories that like nothing, like it's pretty innocent. But then, so one day we went to the church. I don't know what was going on, but they were showing a video of a play called Heaven and Hell or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was getting pretty grabby. Like there were people who were like in different situations or different stages of life and going through different stuff, and they all die and they go to heaven where they I mean, eventually they see if their names are in the Book of Life, and then some of them, Jesus will come and greet them, and some of them will just drive to the hill. And this was me, an 8-year-old, watching this, and everything got like very serious all of a sudden. So I was scared, like it scared the living light out of me. Yeah. So I remember the drive back home, my mom found out that I was kind of like shaking. She was trying to calm me down. So then she turned to me and said, if you want to give your life to Jesus, like, do you want to pray with me? And I said, yeah, please. So we prayed. But to be honest, because I was growing up in the church and I was always in the church and around people, it was so normal to me. Like I'd fully understand the concept or the worth of what I had until we actually had to leave the country, and like all the miracles that I saw throughout that process, it just totally changed me.
It's a good segue into that next question we had, was what did that look like for you all to leave Iran? Why did you leave, and how old were you when that happened?
So back in 2009, I don't know if you remember the whole green movement in Iran and all the crazy things that happened before, like after the revolution of Ahmadinejad. So it was pretty crazy. It was the first time we were like, my brother and I would see people getting hit or killed in the streets. And there were soldiers my age who were forced to go to the streets and hit people. And this was 6 months before I was going to be due for the military service. So my parents were pretty scared. Obviously they were trying to find a way to get me out of the country so I didn't have to go to the military service. Mm-hmm. So my mom, so many crazy things happened during that time that my mom got like emotionally sick. She was not feeling great. So then one day she said, one night before sleeping, she was praying and asking God to show a way, like what to do. I don't want Danny to go to military service. So then she said the next morning I woke up and all of a sudden I had this peace about applying for an organization that was based in Austria. I don't know if they work anymore now, but back then, this organization basically helped ethnic minorities who are under pressure in Iran to go to Austria, help them to get an appointment with the U.S. Embassy and then go to America. But it was crazy because, A, we were technically not ethnic minorities, and B, we knew the process that would take about a year, year and a half for them just to accept you and then proceed. So we only had 6 months. And my mom applied and everybody was laughing, saying there's no way they're going to accept you. Well, my mom said, well, I have this piece about it. I'll just apply. In worst case scenario, we're not going to hear about it. Mm-hmm. So 5 months went by. We didn't hear anything about it. We kind of forget about the whole thing. And exactly a month before I was due for the military service, on Friday night, they called my mom saying, we know your situation is very urgent. Your son's going to be due for the military service in a month. So we're trying to do everything we can to get you out of the country as early as possible. But it was Friday night, and they said, you have to send a crazy amount of money to our bank account in America by Monday morning. And we were saying, well, A, we don't have the money. B, there's no way we can send that amount of money from Iran to America within like 2-3 days. So my mom called one of their friends in America who used to come to Iran. They were pastors of a church in Kansas. She called the friend saying, this is the situation. We don't know what to do. Do you have any suggestions? And she said, just Don't stress about it. We'll see if there's anything we can do. So then Monday morning, she called my mom saying, we went to church, we went on the stage to start talking about your story. And as we're talking, people started writing checks. So by the end of the day, the money was in the bank account.
Wow.
And we were pretty shook. Yeah, so the money was there. And then for 2 weeks, we didn't really hear anything. And we were kind of getting anxious because the way they work is that only on Tuesdays and not other days, they give you an appointment at the Austrian embassy. Mm-hmm. And if they accept your case the following Tuesday, you can go and get your visa. Okay. We only had two Tuesdays until the end of the year where I was going to be due. And we didn't hear anything. So that Tuesday, we went to the embassy. They said, sorry, there's nothing we can do. Your name's not on the list. So my parents started thinking, well, maybe we can find another option, send Danny to Armenia, which didn't need a visa for me to get out, go to Armenia. And so by doing that, I would get out of their case. So I'll go to Armenia and they would still go through the process, go to Austria and then go to America and then apply for me to go, which we knew it's going to take at least 7 or 8 years. So then that was the plan. We got the ticket. I knew I'm going to fly to Armenia. We had good bike parties with everyone. The night before my flight, one of our pastor friends called my mom saying, I know you have this whole plan. It's really logical. It makes sense. And I know what I'm about to say might sound crazy, but what if you trust God and cancel his ticket? Either you all go together and you won't be separated, or you all stay together. But you know, you've trusted God. God wants you there at least. And I always had this peace about it, even though it sounded crazy. So we canceled my ticket the night before my flight. So we only had one Tuesday until the end of the year. So that Tuesday, we went to the embassy thinking it's a shot in the dark. Maybe they'll ask us to go in. We went there, same thing. They said, your name's not on the list. You can't do anything about it. And we came out like, okay, then we're going to stay here, I guess. That night, we were going to go to a family dinner party, where somebody called my phone saying, we're calling from this organization. We know your situation is getting worse. We put everything aside. We're only focusing on your case. So tomorrow morning, this was Wednesday, which was out of their working hours or working schedule. Go to the embassy, do your interview, get your visa, and then you're good to go. We were saying, this is somebody just pulling a prank on us. There's no way. So our friend from America called us saying they're going to call you. So then that's how we knew it was actually real. So we went to the embassy, same thing. We did our interview, got our visa right away. And people at the embassy were telling us, we've been here for 14, 15 years. We've never seen anything like this. This is completely a miracle.
So it's visas for all of your family, for you and your mom?
Actually, yeah. Only me, my mom, and my brother got the visa because my brother and I were on my mom's passport. Uh-huh. And we had to, get the visa on the same passport. But my dad had to stay for a month. Okay. So it was 3 days before Nowruz, which is Persian New Year. Everybody's going on vacation. So we got out the embassy saying, well, okay, we got the visa. How are we going to get a flight? Yeah. There's no flight around. So we kept calling different agencies asking for tickets, and they also started everything booked. There's no way you can get a ticket. So on Friday at noon, a day before Nowruz, when everyone was closing for Nowruz, one of these agencies called us saying, we have 3 canceled tickets for Austria. Do you want it? We said, yes, please. So we got the tickets. And we immediately started just packing everything, and we rushed to the airport. When the officer was taking our passport, at first they were not gonna let me go. Cause I mean, I wasn't surprised, because I've heard stories of people trying to leave even a month before they were due and they wouldn't let them. So I was very stressed.
But you mean because of the military?
Because once you're due for the military service, you cannot leave the country until you go and serve. So by miracle of God, they let me leave. They said, oh, you can go on your vacation. When you come back, you can make it right, your passport right. And we're like, okay, you stay there, I'll come back.
A very long time.
I know. So we got on the plane. And it was so stressful because I only had 8 hours before I was going to be due for the military service. Oh
my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah.
How old were you then?
I was 17.
17. Okay.
About to be 18, I guess, right?
Yes. Yes. So from the new year of the year you're going to turn 18, you're banned from leaving the country.
Okay.
Ah, but they let you.
Yeah, so those few minutes that the plane was going to take off was like the most stressful time of my life.
Go, go, go.
Yeah, I kept feeling like at any moment somebody's going to walk in and ask me to leave. So then it took off and we were mid in the air and I'm turning to my mom like, okay, so we left the country, we're good, but then we're going to Austria where we don't know anyone, we don't know the language, what are we going to do, where are we going to go? So funny thing is that my uncle is like a well-known theologian in the Armenian churches, and he travels around to teach to different churches. And so he goes to Austria once a year to teach for 3 days. He happened to go there the day before we were flying there. And he heard through my dad, who talked with my aunt, and we got to the airport. We saw all of a sudden my uncle is there picking us up from the airport. I mean, it was just crazy. Like, every second we would see like a crazy miracle. So all that to say is that before leaving the country, like church was really like a social club for me. It was a place I would go to hang out with my friends. I mean, I was serving. I started serving at church since I was 10. I was playing instruments. But it wasn't too serious for me until like all those miracles that happened. And I visually could see and feel like when you trust God with your life, what can happen? And that totally changed my life.
That's incredible.
To be honest.
Yeah, you couldn't have scripted that any better if you tried.
No. Kind of back to what you were sharing before with your story of leaving Iran. What did life look like after leaving Iran? And you get to Austria. Did you stay there very long or did you end up in the U.S. pretty quickly after that?
We were there for 8 months, which was not normal because usually people will go there for 2 months or 3 months. So our process took a while because when we got to Austria, they realized they didn't know why they actually accepted us. they accepted us because of my mom's Jewish background, thinking we were Jews. But when we got there, they were questioning themselves, I guess. It's funny, they actually had to create a code for our family because they didn't have any code that would. Yeah, but it took a while. And then after that we went to America. But Austria was we had a lot of fun. And one great thing that happened to me in Austria is that I was serving at church since I was 10. So, and our church in Iran was, I think, the biggest building church in Iran. So if you were on the worship team of our church, it felt like you were being a part of the Hillsong worship team, kind of, where a lot of eyes are on you. And I enjoyed every second of it. But so then when we were living in Iran, that was one thing that I was very sad about, thinking, well, it took me a while to get where I wanted to be in serving God and serving church and playing music. Of course, back then it was more about playing the music than a lot of other things. But so then I was thinking, like, am I ever going to be a part of the worship team anymore? So when we got to Austria, the very first day they put me on the worship team, asking me to play some instrument. And because, I mean, we were just waiting in Austria, we didn't have any school or work to do. So I got myself very involved with different churches. I was a part of 3 different Iranian churches there playing instruments for them. But then I feel like after a while, I kind of lost myself, thinking, well, I'm a superstar. Everybody wants me to play instruments. I kind of got very prideful about it. One church had services on Saturdays, and after a while, I kept saying, like, oh, I don't want to go to church today. I want to hang out with my friends on Sunday. I was saying, I don't want to go to this church. I feel like going to the other. So it's funny because 1 week, I said, okay, I'm going to go to this church on Saturday. I went there and they said, well, we have another instrumentalist. We don't really need you over here. You can maybe focus on other churches. Same thing happened to the other 2 churches on the same week. And at first, it was just very weird to me. But then when I went back home, I was thinking about it. And I was talking with one of my friends, and she said, well, you've really lost why you're doing this and what's the reason, who's the reason why you're doing what you're doing. So I started like praying and fasting and basically asking for forgiveness. And it's funny, from the next week on, they start like the churches out of a sudden started calling me and saying like, hey, you know how we told you, like, we don't really need you. We actually have this service. We need you to come back and pay. So from then on, I mean, I could fully understand why people say, like, if you have a, if you're doing ministry, it's because God wants you to do it. If he doesn't want you to do it, there's nothing you can do about it. Like, so that, I feel like that was a very important lesson for me over there, because now I'm doing a lot more than I used to do, like with working with Elam, doing other ministries. But that incident really humbled me.
What was your part in the music? Do you write music, or do you, what instruments do you play?
No, my main instrument is drums. I've been playing drums since I was 7. And then later on, when I was a teenager, I started playing guitar. And I mean, I've always been into music since I was 4. I'll play like some piano and flute. So I know a little bit of everything, but mostly drums is my main instrument.
Okay.
What was it like to leave Iran? I know that a lot of the people we've talked to are happy that they were safe, they were able to get out, but they also really, really missed the country. For you, was that, did you have that same experience? And, you know, how did you kind of cope with a new country and a new
So actually, for a while, I had this feel of guilt because the way we came out was all miracles. And honestly, we didn't have too much of a hardship living in Iran. Like, the whole process wasn't as hard as a lot of people go through. So when we got to America, for months, I felt guilty, thinking, well, God, thank you for everything you did, but there are so many people who are like, who are more worthy than this. Like, they should have gone through this process, not me. So I don't know. I kind of had a hard time with it, as funny as it might sound. But then I heard this story from Brother Deepaj. I've never met him because he was killed before I was born. I think it was actually when I was born.
The 90s. It was a martyr.
Yes, he was martyred in the 90s, yeah. And it was, I think one or two maybe back then. But I heard this story of him feeling the same thing, like feeling bad when he was in prison, asking God, like, what's going to happen to my kids? And God told him, as much as I'm your father, I'm your kid's father too. So as much as you think about them, I think about them more. So I really talked to me, because God was telling me, as much as I cared for you and thought about how I'm going to bring you out, I'm other people's father too. Like, I'm taking care of them too. But I always kept feeling like there is a reason why I came out. It's not just for me to do whatever I want to do and free, like, live freely. It's for me to have an opportunity to serve back the people I used to live with, basically.
And I'd imagine, because the story was so miraculous of getting out, you can really see his hand in making that happen for you. And that there was, I would think that would make me, I think, maybe have a little bit of peace that there was a purpose.
Yes.
The only way it could have been was through him.
What did it look like for you to, I know that, and you can share about this, we'd love for you to share about what you do now. How did you end up in full-time ministry work? How did that
I mean, I knew a lot of people at Elam through my mom, who used to work with Elam before. I mean, we have the worship team here, and I knew a lot of them from Iran. So before COVID, I used to do some worship projects. I'll be invited as a guest drummer for the program. But then when COVID started and I was stuck at home, I kept feeling like the whole worship program shouldn't stop because of COVID. So I kept trying to think about ways like we can do it remotely, but so it wouldn't stop. So then I came up with the idea of, okay, what if we record from homes and then mix them together and make all those videos? And so I started doing a lot of research, took a lot of online classes on music production, mixing, mastering, and all that. So then we started the whole project of recording Time for Worship from home. Where back then I thought like this is the only project I'm going to do with Elam. Didn't know like there's more to it. But then because a lot of coordination I had to do throughout the project, other people found out I can do coordinating. So I got involved with Elam as a coordinator, and now I'm working full time doing coordinating a bunch of projects with Elam. So that's how we started working full time with Elam.
Okay. If somebody wanted to see those videos, where could they find them? I've seen them, and it's pretty miraculous what you've been able to do. Mm-hmm. Where could they find that?
So they can go to many places. One on Calama website, which is our resources website. They can go on their worship and call Time for Worship. I mean, there are many great seasons there. The season we were doing was the 16th season, I think, of Time for Worship. So they can find it on our resources website called Calame. They can find it on YouTube under Elam TV channel. And the worship team has many social media pages on Instagram and Facebook under the same name.
That's great. Well, I know Jennifer and I have met and really enjoy your wife, Niloufar. How did your work with Elam, how did that enable you to meet her? Can you tell us a little bit about how the two of
them? I actually saw Nilu on the second season of Time for Worship when I wasn't involved with the worship team at all. But because I knew Roosevelt on the show from when I was back in Europe when I was a kid, I was like, who is that girl? Like, she sings so good, and how does Roosevelt know her? And I had seen some of her videos here and there on Facebook, and I was trying to figure out who she is and like where did she come from. So then I actually got invited to be a part of the fifth season of Time for Worship, and Nilo and I remotely started talking, became friends, and that friendship kind of led into a long distance relationship for about 5 years, where we felt like, okay, this, we really, really felt like this was something from God. We really, both of us really heard about it from God. We heard so many, actually, we saw it many times when we were praying about it. So then, as crazy as it sounded, we got into a long distance relationship for 5 years. So we got engaged in 2019. Mm-hmm. Thinking, well, a few months we're going to get married. So I went back to America, getting ready, and all of a sudden COVID hit the world. Yeah. So we were apart for 2 years, and after that, we actually got married last year.
Yeah.
So it's been a year and a few months.
And this is the same Niloufar that we interviewed. Which series was that?
Well, for the worship series, okay. Back in, I think, December. So we can add that to the show notes, the interview with Niloufar, so that people can hear her story. You had shared about hearing other people's conversion stories, how they'd come to know Christ, and how they're often very exciting. And
yeah,
maybe you feel like yours was maybe less so, maybe a little more mundane. But then you also shared about how you felt like God had brought you to an understanding that, you know, your story was, you were part of the big story. Can you share a little bit about that? Just what that kind of becoming more aware of that, how that's given you some peace.
Yeah. So, I mean, back in Iran, every time they had a testimony service or a service where people would share their testimony, you would hear crazy stories, like they were Hollywood material. But you feel like this is the craziest thing you can hear. And then the next person would come up on the stage and share their testimony. And it was weird because I was like, why don't I have a crazy story to tell? Because mine is pretty boring. I was born in the church. I knew all about you. I gave my heart to Jesus. Nothing crazy happened to me. And I felt like, why can't it be a part of a crazy story? And I mean, I had this feeling throughout my old teenage years. And honestly, when I went to school, my major was like engineering, computer, electronics, science. And I kept feeling like, why does it have, like, why, how can I even use this for ministry? Like, it has nothing to do with ministry. But then now that I look back, it's so funny because my mom was a translator of the Bible. She translated Bible using her skill. Now that I got involved with Iran, I was involved with a lot of worship projects at first, but then because of my background with all this engineering stuff that I've studied, I got very involved with very techie projects with Iran now, which one of them is our engagement system at Iran, where people from all over the world, specifically from Iran, can actually chat with us. If they want Bibles or New Testaments, they can order through there, where we can safely and freely send it to them. But in order to get there, I actually had to use all the skills that I learned through school that I thought I would never be using them anywhere in ministry. I'm using them. So it's funny because my mom was a translator and now I'm working with distributing the same Bibles.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I know.
But even just being born into a Christian family in Iran is pretty amazing story in the grand scheme of stories.
Yes. So. Yeah, it's already a pretty unique story that you had.
You have a good story.
No, I do. I love that realization of, what your mom was doing as her part of in that big story, that how you are in a way continuing that in a different, different way. But that's a really neat thing to be able to have that perspective and see how God's worked all that out. So, tell us, I have one more question. Did your dad end up coming? Was he able to move as well?
Yes. So a month after we went to Austria, he actually came to Austria too.
Okay.
Yeah, so we were all together.
Okay, awesome.
Good.
Well, is there anything that we and the listeners that we could be praying for you and for Niloufar about that you'd want to share?
I would say more guidance because we don't really have a long-term plan. We're just going as we're going. Yeah. So when we got married, we really felt like both of us want to work with Elon full time. Both of us actually moved to UK to work with Elon. So we know we're going to be here, but we don't know what's going to happen after. So maybe some more wisdom, more guidance.
It's for the future.
Our future. Yeah, how our future looks.
Yeah. Okay. When is y'all's anniversary? Is it this? Will it be a year this summer? Is that
right? It'll be in April, 23rd of April.
Of next April.
So it'll be our second anniversary.
Okay. April. Been married for a year. Okay. Cool. Well, thanks so much for making time to chat with us, Danny. It's really neat to hear your story. Just having been around you a little bit when we've
not heard that.
Yeah, we haven't heard your story. So, or I haven't. So it's really encouraging to hear all those details and how the Lord has been at work for a long time in your life.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much. And tell Niloufar we said hello. And we'll hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, hope so too.
Thanks for joining us today. I hope you were encouraged to hear Danny share his story of God's faithfulness. Next time, we'll hear from Daria, an Iranian worship leader whose story of coming to Christ includes immigrating to Germany as a child and then learning Farsi years later. Her experience of doing ministry across those two cultures is fascinating. I hope you'll join us next time to hear Daria's unique story. Until then, I hope you experience Jesus in a new way this week. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you haven't already, would you take a moment to subscribe to our podcast or leave us a rating or review? We'd love for more people to learn what Jesus is doing amongst Farsi speakers today. Jesus Speaks Farsi is produced by Elam Ministries, a nonprofit ministry whose mission is to strengthen and expand the church in the Iran region and beyond. For more information, resources, and ways to partner, visit elam.com.